Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, episode 122, we are inciting a problematic pagan riot. I have been holding on to a little bit of audio from the Chicago Pagan Pride festival that I went to in mid-September. Got to meet a lot of you. It was wonderful. It was great. And normally, how that particular show goes is, I do some fun interviews and just kind of piece them together and stick them out there, sometimes with sort of an annual update on kind of my views or some other views on kind of where we are as a pagan community. Well, September 2018 has kind of been a big month for the pagan community, and not in a good way. And so there's just going to be a couple of things that I want to go over today, kind of a throwback riot, to discuss sort of a temperature check on where I think we are as a community and what we should and could be doing to improve on that. But first, I'm going to play you guys a fun interview I did with the gentleman who is in charge of the site for Chicago Pagan Pride. Paul.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi.
Paul, tell me a little bit about Pleasant Home.
Sure. Pleasant Home was built in 1897 by architect George Washington Mayer. It's an early example of prairie style architecture. George Washington Mayer was a contemporary of Frank Lloyd Wright, and this was both early in their careers where they had just finished working, and they were influenced by Louis Sullivan, and both had worked at the architecture firm J.L. Silsby downtown in Chicago. Mayer, though, years after building Pleasant Home, was known for developing his motif rhythm theory. So here in the house, there's like a repeating pattern and elements and motifs all throughout the house. Like, we have like close to 60 lion's heads all around the house, shields and all these decorative elements that are found in furniture, moldings.
One of the things that I love about the architecture of the house is there's really no like hard corners. There's a lot of rounded corners, arches. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful facility.
Yes, it's on the exterior of the facade. It's very linear and kind of stretched out like the prairie. But when you come inside, there are rounded arches. Like, it's very decorative, and there are lots of different layers of materials. There's lots of intricate hand carving in our great hall, and then lots of exposed lighting as well, which is very revolutionary at that time and very expensive. And so it's a very unusual house. It is a National Historic Landmark, and it's a pleasure to come here every single day.
Oh, it is. And so who lived here, and then when did it transition to being, you know, open to the public?
Sure. There were two families that lived here. The first family was John Farson and his wife Mamie and their two teenage sons. And Farson was the one who commissioned the house, and he was known for being a kind of charismatic, flamboyant character who loved carriages and driving around in lots of carriages, and then he went crazy for the automobile. And then the second family were the Mills. So Herbert and Leonie Mills and their eight children, four boys and four girls. And Herbert owned the Mills Novelty Company, which was, the factory was on the western side of Chicago. And they made lots of different types of machines, like vending machines, weighing machines, and slot machines. That's how they made most of their bread and butter. But here at Pleasant Home, we have one of his masterpiece machines, which is called the Violino Virtuoso, and it's a self-playing violin and piano.
Wow.
It's amazing. And it's, it was donated to us by Jasper Santalipo's Foundation. It's remarkable, and we play it for guests whenever they do tours.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Do you ever get, I mean, with such history, do people ever tell you that they, you know, are there hauntings? Are there people that still live here long after the fact?
Depends on who you ask. There are some stories. So in 1913, the coach house, there was a fire, and a maid was like trying to clean a stain with kerosene or gasoline.
Oh, of course.
And she got,
as you do.
Exactly. And she got injured, or she caught on fire, and she was brought into the main house and then died a week later. And so some have said that they can maybe sense her spirits.
Wow. So what kinds of things is Pleasant Home open for?
Yep, we have an array of programming throughout the year. We, in the winter, this past winter, we had this wonderful illusionist, Jeanette Andrews, who did an amazing 3 performances for us, and she was amazing. We just finished up silent movies on our front porch in August with a live pianist, and then October we're doing a silent horror film, again with the same talented pianist, Thomas Holmes, and then we're going to do a Petite Boutique, we're doing Victorian Father Christmas, we're doing walk and talks, architecture lectures, lots of things happening here.
That's so much fun. If people want to find out about the events or maybe host their own, where can they find information?
You can go right to pleasanthome.org. We list all our events there. And also we're on Facebook. You just search for Pleasant Home. And we list up-to-date information about our tours and hours.
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
In early September, there was a massive uproar all around the pagan interwebs regarding the what was called the Starter Witch Kit, sold by a company called Penrose and distributed by a makeup chain giant Sephora here in the United States. Or it was going to be sold by Sephora. In mid to late August of this year, it was announced online that this company, Penrose, was going to be creating and distributing these, what they called, air quotes, starter witch kits. It was actually the name of the product. And immediately, the pagan interwebs glommed onto it in, I'm just going to be real blunt here, in one of the most disgusting displays of pagan gatekeeping that I have seen in years. I mean, years and years and years. And it was one of the most hypocritical things I think I've ever seen in our community, because the kit itself was, I mean, one of those standard, basic starter kits that you would have seen. I mean, if I found this thing at a pagan witchy shop, a pagan run witchy shop, I wouldn't have blinked an eye. I probably wouldn't have picked it up, to be perfectly honest, because it's just, you know, so very, very generic. The kit contained a tarot deck, a number of essential oils, perfumes, because Penrose is actually a perfume company. They're a scent company. It had a piece of tumbled rose quartz and a bundle of white sage. And, you know, I'm assuming some kind of you know, book inside to teach you some basic tarot and some other stuff. And the immediate reaction from the community was this vitriol against, you know, the basic white girl, the basic white witch, the basic white girl that shops at Sephora and is picking up this pagan starter kit and is disgracing the good name of what it means to be a witch. And it just completely smacked of gatekeeping, of we don't want you in our sandbox playing with our toys, especially not if you found them at Sephora. I mean, there seemed to have been this hate, this hate against this product. And to my eyes, it seemed to have been drummed up by the fact that it was sold at Sephora. Well, in the weeks that followed the big outcry, the big uproar, there were a number of reasons attributed to why people decided that they hated it. And one of them was good, and the others were all really, really bad You know, there was this notion of, oh, well, we hate this kit because, you know, oh, it's the artist that sold the tarot cards, or the artist that designed the art for the tarot cards. She never got compensated. She never got paid. They stole this art from this artist. And that was quickly debunked. The artist had uploaded her art to one of those stock imaging websites. You yourself can buy, you can license the art, you can download it, you can manipulate it, you can use it for resale, because that's the license under which the artist herself uploaded the art for the world to use. There's a number of other different tarot designs if you happen to like the way she did it. And you can use them, manipulate them, color them in, tweak them a little bit, and sell your own tarot deck based on that artist's artwork. You can pay her a licensing fee, and you too can use this tarot deck. Is it a wildly original? No, it's not. But neither is much of the stuff that we sell in the New Age section of the bookstore. So get over that particular point. The next thing seemed to be, oh, well, it's a tumbled stone. That's really dumb. Who needs rose quartz? The perfumes are ridiculous. How dare we sell perfume, even though if you go to a pagan festival, I mean, I was looking around at Pagan Pride with this sort of controversy in mind, thinking how many booths at Pagan Pride were selling essential oils. There was one argument, though, that was good. It did come out to be a pretty good argument, though not for the reasons it initially was, and it was the bundle of white sage. There were a lot of people that glommed onto this idea that, you know, how dare they sell white sage? And to be honest, it's sort of, I'm glad this happened in a way, because it opened my eyes to the problematic appropriation of the pagan community of white sage, which has a history with Native American cultures spanning back beyond, you know, definitely beyond white colonials coming over here and taking this country and deciding that it was ours. The argument regarding the white sage was twofold. One was that white sage is this endangered plant and that we've overharvested it, and that the Native Americans that want to use it for their own practices can't even access it because it's basically extinct. That's not true. I don't quite know where that misinformation came from, but it's simply not true. The organizations like the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, where that you know, white sage grows naturally in California, you know, they all said this is not endangered. I think it's on one list of herbs to watch. It doesn't mean that it's endangered. It doesn't mean it's hard to get. It's just they're watching it because a lot of people use it. The bigger part, though, that did come out that I do appreciate and was very glad to have had my own eyes open to is the appropriation of white sage, especially by white people in the pagan community, myself included, without having done any good, thorough research on white sage as a tool of cleansing and just basically using it. I mean, I've said it, I don't know how many times on my show on Inciting a Brouhaha, just basically using it like magical pine sol. And there is a much deeper, much richer history to white sage that I think that if you're going to continue to use it, we should do what I have been, you know, espousing for 10 years. And I was very happy to be called out on it. And actually do our own research into what white sage is culturally and spiritually to the people that you know have cultivated this herb and this practice and this spiritual practice that we've just appropriated and never thought twice about, because it's just easy. You just burn white sage and you're done. And I think it is a good idea to have that wake-up call, to have that call to action, and to have that call to research. And that is what I appreciated about, if anything good came out of all of this, that. But to digress for a moment, the derision that came out regarding the Penrose Starter Witch Kit seemed to be so reactionary, purely based on the aesthetic of the item. And didn't really seem to be based in anything other than that, at least for several weeks, until some other people started making some good points. And the reason that I find this so incredibly problematic is that, one, Penrose is a women-owned, women-run company based here in the United States. They create, source, package, and distribute their products all here in the United States. So it's a women-run business, which is something I think most of us are you know, in support of. Small shop under like a dozen people or so. Turns out the White Sage was going to be sourced from a secondary Native American company, Native American owned and operated and run. Now, what that company is, who that company is, that information hasn't been revealed. That could all be completely made up. But in the days since, and spoiler alert, Penrose is no longer creating the Starter Witch kits. They did not go on sale. We ran them off. Yay us. Go us. We won. Against the people that wanted to make Starter Witch kits and bring magic to the world. And what just upsets me so much about this is that we made a lot of assumptions about who these people were and what their intentions were and who the people would be that might pick up this kit. And we decided that we didn't want any part of it at all. We didn't want the aesthetic. We didn't want the look. We didn't want the people. We didn't want any of it. And we hurt a small, you know, small business run by women who are interested in pagan witchy stuff. And I'm like, what more did we want out of this? What more did we want? Who, you know, are we mad that it wasn't made by Llewellyn? Are we mad that it wasn't put out by Wiser? Like, what else are we mad about? And if what we're mad about is who it was aimed at and the aesthetics of it, then let's at least be honest about that so that we can admit to ourselves that we just didn't like it because it was pink. Folks, there are a lot of reasons to get upset and to protect our community, but this just really didn't feel like one of them. This really didn't feel like a time to put our hackles up and to get overly protective and overly precious about the ways in which people come into our community. People come into the pagan community from all sorts of places. I came into it because I loved Halloween and learned about the real history of Halloween from a book that I think my mom got at Target when I was a kid. You know, people come to it from Disney. People come to it from a class they took on Greek mythology in sixth grade. People come to it because they went to a gathering. They went to a party and somebody there was doing tarot. They might pick up a book at Sephora. They might, I mean, wherever it is their entryway into our community. And there is no right way to enter our community. And there's no wrong way to enter our community. If somebody is intrigued, great. We've got to realize, folks, that if we start getting precious about entryways into our community, we're about to be in for a year of upset. We've got a remake, a reboot of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. We've got a reboot of Charmed. There's a whole lot of witchy stuff going on TV and movies these days. And those folks are going to be excited, inspired. They're going to be Googling witchcraft. They're going to be looking up those Wikipedia pages. They're going to be taking their first stumbling blocks into witchcraft. Some of them may stay for the real witchcraft, and some may even stay for the paganism. Some of them might show up at your pagan prides next year. Some of them might show up at your Halloween open houses. And I have to tell you, if you run them off, you're doing this community a disservice. We are very small. We are 0.03% of the population. We cannot afford to be precious about the ways in which we enter our community. My goodness, Samhain is upon us. Halloween is upon us. Have some fun, for goodness sakes. Stop running people off because they don't fit your aesthetic of what a pagan should be. That's not okay. And that's not the kind of community that I want to be a part of and that I think that is going to last. Because if we don't let anybody else into our sandbox to play with our toys, eventually our little teeny tiny community ain't gonna be around much longer. They're just not. Spiritual groups evolve, they grow, and they include people. Our our big thing is that, you know, our whole deal in the pagan community, at least that I saw walking around at Pagan Pride, seems to be that we include the people that feel excluded everywhere else. Well, if one of those people shops at Sephora, who are you to say that they can't be part of our community? Well, hi there, James. James Hi, Webb, right?
That's me.
Very nice to meet you, sir.
Thank you.
So tell me about this project called The Prayer.
It's called Prayer. Yeah, it's an ongoing artwork that started in 1999. I do work in different cities. I do audio recording of vocal worship from different religions found in that city. So I'm here in Chicago, the 10th iteration of this project. And I've been working with Bronte Mansfield, who is an audio journalist, and with the Art Institute of Chicago to research different faiths here, found here, and we've done audio recordings of these different faiths. Everyone from the Baha'i Temple to the Chalice of Heaven Lodge of the OTO to Solitary Witches, you name it, we have been able to collaborate with these amazing people and do very simple audio recordings of prayer, songs, hymns, nasheeds, things like that. And these are presented together in an art installation at the Art Institute.
What is it that you find in hearing these different kinds of prayers, these different audio samples of religion? I mean, are you finding, you know, that everything's a lot of the same with different voices?
Yes and no. I mean, you find a lot of amazing individuals who have got some incredible positions on their, the way they articulate the universe for themselves. And so it's very political in a way. It's like religion connects to what makes you want to get up in the morning, what keeps you awake at night, or what your personal politics are. Religion connects to diet, to fashion, to everything, to your agency. So it's been amazing to hear that. And very often you might have a Mormon who might have a prayer that is arguably very similar to that of a Thelemite. And that's incredible. So there are those similarities, and there are also differences, even in, say, one religion where one person might be praying for one thing and someone might be praying for something else. So it's about these positions and how they make up the individuals that form the city. So the installation is a possibility, it's an option, not an option, it's an opportunity rather, to listen to the hopes, dreams, fragilities, celebrations of the city. It's a lens to look at the city. So it's a very simple initiative, but it brings some remarkable people together. And in the installation, you can either listen to all the speakers play at the same time, so you can listen to it as one blur of
wow.
sound, or you can, the speakers are placed on a carpet on the floor, you can kneel down, referencing the kind of choreography of prayer, supplication, genuflection, and listen to that one particular person. So it's, you can have that intimacy of listening to one person, but you can always hear the others in the periphery. So the one is not taken out of the context of the many. And that's an important thing.
What do people pray for?
Goodness, absolutely everything. And that's incredible. So someone might bring their insecurities and fragilities, and you see prayer as an act of confession, but also an act of therapy and catharsis, and people being absolutely invigorated that they are breathing, that they woke up and they beat the sickness that they had yesterday, and also that they're determined to beat the issue that they're dealing with at the moment. So it's hopes, it's fears, it's all these political, social positions. And so it's this library of worship that's activated by being heard together. That's a very important part of the installation, is that it's heard together. So you can have many moments and many different perspectives.
That's beautiful. If people want to find out more about you, your work, where can they do
Thank
that?
Thank you. My website is literally theotherjameswebb.com. All my social media is on that, but I'd say more importantly, go to the Art Institute of Chicago. This installation runs every day. It concludes on the 31st of December. That these prayers run every day, almost like a vigil, praying for advancement of spirituality and enlightenment in this world that we find ourselves in now. They'll be on every day until the end of the year.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Don.
Pleasure to meet you.
So I feel like the next part of this episode needs to come with a trigger warning. We're going to be having a very light discussion about sexual misconduct inside of the pagan community. I'm not going to get into a lot of details. I've already blogged about it extensively. You can go read some of those articles on incitingariot.com. where I have linked to other articles by other bloggers, specifically Sarah Lawless. In mid-September, there was what can only be described as a bombshell article that was released by Sarah Lawless that I need to first and foremost say that I found compelling and heartbreaking and passionate and brave. It's the kind of bravery that we don't often see in our community because it went beyond just discussing myth and folklore and the things that we like to talk about in the pagan community, even the things that we like to disagree on, that we get passionate about and debate. It went into real world, real life stuff. And I firstly want to reach out and tell Sarah, if she's listening, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for shedding a light on the improprieties and injustices going on in our community. And what I'm talking about here is that Sarah Lawless released a blog on her website, sarahannlawless.com, in which she describes her own personal, hashtag me too history in and around the pagan community. She describes in harrowing detail her experiences of personally being victimized by other people in the community, her witnessing other people being victimized in the community and those with power doing nothing about it, even encouraging this kind of sexual abuse. Sexual misconduct is one of the many things about our community that everybody sort of knows goes on and happens and doesn't say anything about. It's not so different from the world at large. A lot of our community members inside of the pagan community, inside of pagan festivals, like to think that we are special because we're pagan, that the problems of the macro culture don't affect us because we do magic and believe in gods and fairies and spirits and things. And I hope that one of the things that I've done over my time doing Inciting a Riot, the podcast, the blog, and all of that, is to shine a light on the fact that our community, our culture, is part of the macro culture. We don't get away with stuff. Stuff isn't different for us because we're pagan. It's the same. We're the same. The macro culture is our culture. Our culture is the macro culture. We may believe slightly different things, but it doesn't take away from the fact that we still belong to the world at large, and the problems of the world at large are our problems too. Sarah has brought to light the fact that there are a number of greater issues affecting our community. And ever since releasing her blog post, she has reminded our community of that in follow-up posts on social media and her other outlets as well. Things that I've talked about here on the riot have been things like racism and Nordic Reconstructionism, transphobia in women-only circles, specifically at places like PantheaCon, pedophilia and child porn. We all remember what happened with Kenny Klein a few years ago. Sexual misconduct at festivals and beyond, the coven couch, as I've heard people talk about it lately, where people with power practice a kind of sexual gatekeeping for new people that might want to be a part of circles, of gatherings, of festivals. Sarah's brought to light that at a lot of pagan festivals, at least over the last several decades, there has been a lot of pressure for sexual misconduct to occur, for people to engage in acts in which they did not truly consent, in which they did not truly want to participate in, but felt required to do so as part of attending this event. And I don't want to dance around it any longer. Somebody that I adored, respected, considered a friend at some point in my tenure with Inciting a Riot was named. It was Mojo of the Wiggly and Way. And the things that he has been alleged of doing are awful. They are reprehensible. And I was at a loss when I first read her article and realized who she was talking about, because originally she didn't name names, but she later confirmed them on social media that she was indeed talking about Mojo, and to an extent Sparrow as well. And it hit me because there's been a lot of people in our community. I feel like our community is made up of a lot of, and I don't know if this is just because these are the people that I surround myself with, or the people that find my show, and so that's who I think the pagan community is. But I feel like our community tends to lean a little bit more left of center than right of center. You know, except for all the horrible racism. But I think we like to think of ourselves as progressives. I think, you know, and I think you can attribute that to a lot of things. You know, people think of Christians as conservatives, so maybe they lean harder to the left because it feels like they're rejecting their past or whatever. I don't know, but I feel like our community at least tries to tell itself that it is liberal, that it is left-wing, that it's progressive, that it is rights for all and civil liberties and all of that. And I feel like I have seen a lot of people share a lot of hashtag me too, of hashtag believe women, of all of these little hashtag easy click to share memes that made it sound like we as a community were gonna be the kind of people that when our first big two moment happened, we were going to be the people that did it right. We were going to be the people that believed the woman. We were going to be the people that actively, outwardly came out in force in a show of support for the victim and decried the accused, the abuser. And I am shocked at how little has been done since this announcement. Now, this announcement has made waves on social media, but that's like about it. There's really not a lot of blogs written about this. I mean, we have pagan news media outlets that a lot of times, I always kind of wonder how they're finding all this pagan news, because there's just not a lot of, I mean, some of the articles kind of reach, you know, they kind of reach a little bit to be considered news. But places like The Wild Hunt have remained conspicuously quiet ever since Sarah Lawless's blog post. And I know these people read it because I've seen people that work for The Wild Hunt sharing these articles, reading my my reaction to Sarah's blog post. I know that other podcasters have seen this. I know they've read it because I see them sharing these posts, and I don't see the outward, active taking a stand in this moment. Leaders in this community need to realize that we are being looked at right now. And I know I said we, and I realize that my stake in that is very small compared to some other folks, but anybody with a voice, anybody with any kind of platform right now, your silence is being noticed. It is being counted. And the women that read your writing, the victims of abuse that listen to your shows, that know about this Me Too accusation, that know about this list, that know that a lot of this stuff is being brought up, that in the wake of Sarah Lawless's blog post, I can't tell you how many dozens and dozens and dozens of women have come forward, and some men too, talking about their own history of abuse, specifically inside our pagan community, specifically inside the pagan community, not just at the world at large, but in our community. and talking about how their experience at festivals, at prides, at other institutions, at witchy shops, at, you know, trying to get into certain circles, seeking out teachers, seeking out students, how their experiences corroborate Sarah Lawless's experience, how their experiences mimic Sarah Lawless's experience, how Sarah is not alone by a long shot. I discussed on a blog post recently that statistically speaking, 95% of people, when they come out and accuse somebody, 95% of people are, one, making a correct allegation that abuse did indeed happen, and two, are accusing the right person. 95% of people that find the courage to come out and say something are naming the right person. 95% chance that that is happening. There is a little over a 4% chance that something did happen, that abuse did occur, but due to extenuating circumstances, they are unable to name the right person. And that could have been inebriation, it could have been time, it could be a lot of other factors. That abuse did happen, but maybe they were not naming the right person. Not maliciously trying to name the wrong person, but naming the wrong person because of extenuating circumstances. Out of all of those statistics, the numerous studies that have been done, I link to all of these on the blog, there is a 0.15% chance that a person finding the courage to come out and name somebody as having abused them, there is a 0.15% chance that that person is doing so to maliciously lie, to actively try to hurt somebody that they are accusing. A 0.15% chance. And can I tell you how disgusted I've been at the number of people in our community that have been sharing these Me Too, I believe women, how dare Brett Kavanaugh this, how dare our president that, memes, posts, blog articles, New York Times, you know, articles and op-eds and all sorts of other stuff. How many people in our community have been sharing those? But then the very second that it's the author you like, the teacher you respect, the podcaster that you listen to, all of a sudden it's somebody that you know and like. And boy, we sure hold hard to those in-group, out-group dynamics, because the number of people, women especially, who have come out and flat out said that Sarah is lying for money, that Sarah is lying because she wants to get a name for herself, or that she's mad at some of these men, that she's just a bitter, old, horrible woman. That number of people disgusts me. I am upset with our community right now. I am not sitting in a place of okay with our community at large right now. Because we have the opportunity to come out and be the right, do the right thing, be the voice, be the change. And there is so much conspicuous silence right now. So much conspicuous silence. And I get it. The people with a voice, the people with a platform, they want to talk about Samhain right now. It's October. They want to talk about Samhain. They want to talk about jack-o'-lanterns. They want to talk about folklore and myth and magic and spiritual practice and witchy stuff. And they want to talk about the fun things. And I get it, guys. It's fun to be a witch in October. I get it. And it might not have been the most opportune time for you personally for this kind of thing to happen. But other podcasters, one of our own was named. And I feel like a lot of people are looking at the rest of us, wanting to know how we feel about that. I condemn the things that Mojo of the Wiggly and Way has been accused of. I believe women. I believe Sarah Lawless. I condemn the actions of the other people on that list and the people that are not on that list, that aren't on Sarah's radar, the other people that have perpetrated similar or worse things in our community that we all know full well goes on. I condemn that. Publicly, outwardly, I condemn it. I don't abide it. And I think that, you know, if you're subscribing to that show, I think you might want to hit unsubscribe. I think there are other people that do amazing work that you could be supporting. There is a very small chance, very small chance, that Sarah would go through take the time to come out publicly with her story in order to just maliciously hurt a bunch of men that she hates. Chances are she's telling the truth, and chances are we are doing a whole heck of a lot of nothing about it. I don't have a lot more to say about that other than to shine a light on the fact that this is happening. It's happening right now, and we have the moment, we have the opportunity to get this right. After Z Budapest went on her transphobic tirade at PantheaCon, it took them a few years to get it right. Because it didn't just happen once, it happened a few years in a row. And still to this day, people talk about PantheaCon with just this taint of, well, what awful crap is going to happen at PantheaCon this year? What horrible transphobic LGBT phobic thing is going to happen this year? What anti-woman thing is going to happen at PantheaCon this year? There's been a taint on that event. You can't really hear PantheaCon around the pagan interwebs without thinking of the thing that happened. There's a lot of problems in our community. When Kenny Klein was arrested and thrown in jail, boy, there were a lot of people, a lot of people willing to come forward, throw his books away, try to figure out, you know, what do we do with books that we, I mean, you know, there was a conversation happening. There was a unified conversation. The Wild Hunt sure picked up that story with a quickness. Wild Hunt hadn't said a peep about this one. There are all sorts of organizations that put themselves forward as pagan news of note. Not a peep from any of them. Not a single peep. Is it because our community is small and we don't have that many people that we all consider a big name, so we don't want to get rid of the few that we do have? We probably should. Maybe we'd have newer, better, bigger voices to come forward if the men that were running things were not horrible, awful, raping shitbags. Maybe there would be space for the good if we didn't have such awful in charge. We have the chance to get this right, and I hope that we take it. Rioters, I want to thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I know that it got really heavy there, and it should, because our community isn't perfect. Not by a long shot. Not by a long shot. And we need to quit pretending that it is. We need to quit pretending that we don't have anything to, that we don't have any problems. That we don't have awful, awful racism running rampant in our community. We need to quit pretending that we don't whitewash things, that we don't appropriate from cultures. We need to quit pretending that the people that are in power are always altruistic. And we need to believe victims when they come forward. And those of us with a platform and a voice, we need to remember that I know that our topics of choice might be fun, witchy things. And I get that, especially in October. But we need to remember that those of us with a platform are the ones that people listen to. We're the tent poles of the community. Those of us that put up the blogs, that record these podcasts, that write the books, they're the folks that people turn to for comfort, for guidance, for next steps. Hit the unsubscribe button. Stop buying the books. get better leaders in power. Don't go to an event if an awful rapist shitbag is in charge. Tell other people when you know something is happening. If you suspect something is happening, please. Pagan pride, right? We should be proud to be pagan. And that shouldn't just be the cool witchy stuff. That should be the community. We should invite people into the community and they should feel safe and welcome while they're here. You can find show notes on incitingariot.com. You can like, rate, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, and anywhere else podcasts are streamed. You can like the show on Facebook. You can find me on there as well. I'm on Twitter at incitingariot. This is a Patreon-supported podcast. I want to say thank you to anybody who is giving as little as $1 an episode on patreon.com/incitingprojects right now. For the month of October until October 20th, I'm doing a joint giveaway with Mickey Mueller, who will be the guest on the next episode of the show. You can find details about that on the Facebook page. If you're a Patreon supporter, you are already entered to win, and one of you guys is going to be guaranteed to win. So there is a gift, a giveaway for Patreon supporters, and a giveaway for everybody else. So thank you guys for liking the show. Thanks for listening. You can email me, Firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. I look forward to hearing from you. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light.